Good morning, good morning, good morning. The chair calls the second meeting of the ALA Council to order. We will follow the same rules that were approved during the ALA Council 1 meeting. Your voting record is at your place. You should have an ivory card for this morning's meeting. If you want to speak at this meeting, please go to a microphone, wait for recognition, then give your name and indicate if you are a division counselor, a chapter counselor, a counselor at large, or a roundtable counselor. You will be asked to raise one of your hands for all votes that are not adopted by general consent. Only if the vote seems close will I call for a standing vote. If you must leave before adjournment, please take your card to Lois Ann over at the projectionist table. A quorum for a council meeting is 75 counselors. I have been advised that we have well over 75 counselors present, and therefore, we have a quorum. The agenda ALA Council document 8.2 revised, and all other documents issued since the last council meeting are available at the document pickup station in this room. I would suggest that those of you who are on the agenda to report come up on the stage and sit beside Keith Veal shortly before your presentation. This will enable us to move through the agenda more efficiently. Thank you. Please note that when I introduce the ALA Honorary Membership Nomination Agenda item, I will ask if any counselor wishes to debate the nomination. If any counselor so indicates, this item will be moved into closed session and placed at the end of the agenda to minimize the disruption of the meeting. The closed session will begin at 12 noon to allow time for adequate discussion of the nomination. Comments in support of a nomination do not need to be made in comments in support of a nomination do not need to be made in closed session. Again, in support of. Under the 24-hour rule, we have received the following resolutions to add under new business. Resolution on notifying conference and meeting attendees of hotels named on Do Not Patronize lists, ALA Council Document Number 32 revised. Resolution in support of requiring the right to cancel contracts with hotels with active labor disputes, ALA Council Document Number 34 revised. Resolution on the removal and censorship of artwork from the Smithsonian Institution's National Portrait Gallery, ALA number 36 revised. Resolution on WikiLeaks and federal agencies, ALA Council Document number 37 revised. Resolution in support of WikiLeaks, ALA Council Document number 38 revised. And resolution in support of requesting Congress to reintroduce and vote on the DREAM Act, ALA Council Document number 39, revised January 9, 2011. Do you have any other new business to add at this time? Microphone number 3.
Carrie Gardner at large. In the interest of time, I'd like to withdraw motion Council Document 34.
Okay. We are withdrawing from discussion today resolution in support of requiring the right to cancel contracts with hotels with active labor disputes. Are there any other amendments to the agenda? Microphone number 2.
Peter Hepburn, GLBTRT Councillor. I'm requesting that Council Document 36 be moved to new business at Council 3 so that the Committee on Legislation can weigh in on it.
We have a request to move Council Document number 36, Resolution on the Removal and Censorship of Artwork from the Smithsonian Institution's National Gallery, to Council Session 3. Are there any other amendments? Number 6, microphone number 6.
Tiffany Connor, CERT Councillor. I would like to request that Council Document number 37 and 38 be moved to the beginning of new business in Council 3, as I've submitted revised versions.
We have a request to move the resolution on WikiLeaks and federal agencies to the beginning of new business in Council 3. Are there any other amendments to the agenda? Seeing none, the agenda is approved as amended. The chair directs you to ALA Council Document Number 17 and calls upon Councillor John Moorman, Chair of the Policy Monitoring Committee, to present the report. John.
Thank you. You have in front of you Council Document Number 17. Before I start with it, I'd like to make a couple of comments for new councillors and others. The Policy Monitoring Committee does not make policy. What it does is take policy that was made by this body at its previous session and brings to you motions to insert this policy in the appropriate places in our policy manual. Also, would like to remind you that there is a policy monitoring, policy manual review task force that is working on revising and codifying the policy manual, and that task force will hopefully report back to you at Council in annual. So we have four action items for your consideration today. Action item number one, Council Resolution CD number 43. PMC moves the following changes in the ALA policy manual. Change policy 54.16 from this text, 51.16, gay rights. The American Library Association Council reaffirms its support for equal employment opportunity for gay librarians and library workers. The Council recommends that libraries reaffirm their obligation under the Library Bill of Rights to disseminate information representing all points of view on this topic. To this text, 54.16, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender rights. The American Library Association supports equal employment opportunity for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender librarians and library workers. That is the motion.
We have a motion on the floor, action item number one for the Council Resolution CD number 43. Do we have any discussion? Seeing no discussion, we can move forward with a vote. All those in favor of item one, please raise one of your hands. All those opposed to item number one, please raise one of your hands. The motion has passed. Please mark your ballot, CD number 17, item 1.
Item, action item number 2, Council Resolution CD number 45, revised. PMC moves the following changes in the ALA policy manual. Change policy 7.1.1 from this current text, 7.1.1, second paragraph, non-discrimination in conference contracts. The ALA will enter into conference center site contracts only with organizations and legal bodies in cities, counties, or states that do not by law discriminate against lesbian, gay, and bisexual people. To this text, 7.1.1, non-discrimination in conference contracts. There shall be no discrimination, including that based on race, origin, color, sex, sexual orientation, creed, or disability, in the use of any facilities used by the American Library Association. This policy shall become a part of ALA contracts for the use of space. The ALA will avoid entering, whenever possible, into convention center contracts with organizations and legal bodies in cities, counties, or states that by law discriminate against gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender people. ALA will provide materials for promoting sensitivity to sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression for all employees on the floor of each convention center, including employees of companies to which the convention center has contracted for services on the floor of the convention.
Is there any discussion on this item? Hearing no discussion, we will move forward with the vote. All of those in favor of CD number 17, item 2, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion carries. Mark your ballot. CD number 17, item 2.
Action item 3, Council Resolution CD number 19.3. PMC moves the insertion of the following at 53.1.23. 53.1.23, Prisoners' Right to Read. The American Library Association asserts a compelling public interest in the preservation of intellectual freedom for individuals of any age held in jails, prisons, detention facilities, juvenile facilities, immigration facilities, prison work camps, and segregated units within any facility. Those who cherish their full freedom and rights should work to guarantee that the right to intellectual freedom is extended to all incarcerated individuals. See Policy Reference File, Prisoners' Right to Read, and Interpretation of Library Bill of Rights, 2009-2010, CD number 19.3.
Is there any discussion on item 3? Hearing no discussion, we will move forward with the vote. All those in favor of item number 3, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion carries. Mark your ballot. CD number 17, item 3.
Action item 4, Executive Board number 12.19, electronic signatures. And I'll give a little explanation of this. At the fall 2008 Executive Board meeting, the ALA Executive Board voted to support the use of electronic signatures whenever the American Library Association Constitution, bylaws, and policy manual require members to petition for candidacy or other action. To bring the ALA policy manual in agreement with this resolution, because ALA is now doing this, PMC moves the following change in the ALA policy manual. 6.2.1, petitions for establishment of new units of ALA. Minimum acceptable standards for petitions requesting the establishment of new divisions, roundtables, and other units of ALA are 1. The purpose of the petition shall be clearly stated on a single sheet attached to each group of signature pages. Number 2. Each signature page shall contain this statement, quote, I favor this petition to, end quote. 3. Petitioners shall sign, and that was a typo on my part, and I will get it corrected, rather than sigh, and give library affiliation legibly. Failure to do so may result in the invalidation of the petition. 4, information about this format and a sample petition will be supplied from ALA headquarters to anyone inquiring. 5, petitioners shall be personal members of ALA. Next time I will do more than spell check. To this text, and what I am going to do is not read the whole text again, but simply read to you the bolded and underlined sections which are changed from the current reading. Petitions requesting the establishment of new divisions, roundtables, and other units of ALA may be filed in electronic or paper format. For electronic petitions, the process found on the ALA website shall be used in the petition process.
Is there any discussion on item number 4 as humorously amended? Hearing no discussion, we will move forward with the vote. All those in favor of the motion to, and item number four, you're making me do it, John. And item 4, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion carries. Mark your ballot, CD number 17, item number 4.
Pending items. Ambiguity of the term headquarters. This has been a part of our committee for a while, and this will be considered once the Constitution and Bylaws Committee has completed its review of the ALA bylaws and Constitution. And in conclusion, the committee wishes to thank its staff liaison, Lois Ann Gregory Wood. As always, her knowledge, patience, and cheerful willingness to fill any request at short notice was essential to the successful operation of this committee. The committee also wishes to acknowledge the void left by the passing of Norman Horrocks. His knowledge, kind and caring guidance, and prodigious memory of ALA policy and operations are sorely missed. This concludes my report.
Thank you very much, John. As we wait for Jim Reddick to join us up here at the podium, I'm going to mention that this morning members of the association joined for the 2011 Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Sunrise Celebration. Our thanks to the members who celebrated Dr. King's life, the member leaders who read from his work, to Dr. Michael K. Honey, who provided a keynote address, Jennifer Grady for her call to action, and to the Social Responsibilities Roundtable, the Black Caucus of the American Library Association, and World Book, Inc. for their support and sponsorship of the event. Microphone number two. Let's give him a hand. Microphone number two. Microphone number two.
Sue Kam, Counselor at Large. Point of information on the Policy Monitoring Committee report. Is it the Constitution and Bylaws Committee or a special task force that was formed with the late Dr. Horrocks as chair that's going to be reviewing the Constitution and Bylaws?
We have a policy review task force that has been formed, Sue, and actually it's in my president's report, and John is chairing that as well.
Okay.
And that may have caused a little confusion.
Thank you.
Okay. And now I direct you to ALA Council Document Number 27 and 27.1, and call upon Councillor Jim Reddick, Chair of the Committee on Organization, to present the report.
Good morning, and thank you, Madam President, for calling me a counselor. I am not, but I'm flattered. I'll also note in this report I discovered moments ago that spell check does not find missing words. Koo brings with forward three action items and a number of information items, which you can read in the report. The first action item is at the request of GLBTRT for a change of name. And the action item is that Koo recommends that Council approve the change, insert the word in, name of the Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgendered Roundtable to the Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgender Roundtable. The change is to delete the ER from the end of transgendered. The reasons for this is that this reflects current practice and the preferences of members of the transgender community. And you may recall, those of you who were on council a year or two ago, that this issue came up with some council documents because of variant uses of those two terms, inconsistent uses. So this is in line with that as well. So Koo recommends that council approve this name change to GLBTRT.
Is there any discussion? Hearing no discussion, we will move forward with a vote. All those in favor of item number one, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion passes. Mark your ballot, CD number 27, item one.
The second action item comes at the request of the Web Advisory Committee. The Web Advisory Committee in recent years has been dealing with a number of accessibility issues, and they have invited and had consistent participation from the chair of the ASCLA Accessibility Assembly at its meetings. They want to formalize this relationship, and therefore Koo recommends that Council amend the composition of the Web Advisory Committee by adding as an ex officio member the chair of the ASCLA Accessibility Assembly.
We have a motion on the floor for item number two. Is there any discussion? Hearing no discussion, we will move forward with a vote. All those in favor of item two, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion passes. Mark your ballot. CD number 27, item two.
The final action Koo brings to you comes from Executive Director Fields and President Stevens.
For a number of years, the handbook and its surrogate today has had on the books a joint committee of the American Library Association and the American Association of Publishers. This committee has had a checkered history. There was a time where it was dormant. Mr. Fields made efforts in recent years to revive it. The extent of that revival that has been workable have been meetings generally in conjunction with ALA's Spring Legislative Day in Washington, D.C., of a meeting of him, the ALA president, and the president of the AAP. One of the reasons for recommending a dissolution of this committee and charging the executive director and immediate past president with maintaining this relationship is that the organizations have two very different structures and cultures. ALA is a personal voluntary organization in which its members are individuals for the most part. The AAP is an organization of organizational members, primarily publishers and companies in the publishing industry. There have not, in recent memory, been any appointees to this committee from the AAP. The ALA committee has a set structure, a membership, which includes a number of the officers, and the logistics for getting these meetings scheduled have been daunting. And so the recommendation is to institutionalize recent practice with a minor tweak to it. And the committee would be dissolved, and instead the executive director would make sure that the relationship remains with at least one face-to-face meeting with senior people from the two organizations. We would be represented by the executive director and the immediate past president. Why the immediate past president? The president has a very, very busy schedule all the year of that term. And the immediate past president is still conversant in the issues and can represent the membership. The other issue here has been that this is not the whole of the relationship between the two associations. There is consistent, frequent communication between the Office for Intellectual Freedom, the Intellectual Freedom Committee, and between the Washington office and various people at the AAP. We don't always agree on issues. That's why it's important to maintain this relationship and formalize a communication channel in addition to those that go on, especially at the staff level. So, CU recommends that Council discontinue the ALA-AAP Joint Committee in favor of a more workable system of maintaining an important ongoing inter-association relationship. And you have the entire proposal as an appendix to this report, and its concluding section includes an implementation paragraph that explains what that would mean.
Is there any discussion on action item number 3? Hearing no discussion,
sorry,
we will move.
Get to the microphone.
Microphone number 4.
Barbara Jenko, Council at Large. I appreciate the change. I just want to remind all of us that at a time when looking to the United Kingdom and we see that libraries are being cut out of the distribution chain for e-books, maintaining a strong and vigorous relationship with the Association for American Publishers is more important than ever. And I appreciate that our executive director and our executive committee are going to take the lead, but please, please, please keep this at the front of the agenda. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Hearing no further discussion, we will move forward with a vote. All those in favor of action item number 3, please raise one of your hands. All those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion passes. Mark your ballot CD number 27, item number 3.
I commend your reading the information items. Some of them are more intriguing than others. All are important. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim. I now direct you to ALA Council Document number 22 and call upon Kenton L. Oliver, President of the Freedom to Read Foundation, to present his report.
Thank you, President Stevens. Council, greetings this morning. Luckily, you do have a fascinating document to read in front of you, so I'd like to cover the high points of this very briefly. First of all, hopefully all the counselors know that the Freedom to Read Foundation is the First Amendment defense arm of the American Library Association. And our membership is made up not just of librarians, but of booksellers, authors, attorneys, people involved with the publishing field. It's a wide variety of members that does important work with the First Amendment. Freedom to Read Foundation has been involved in a period of transition right now, and I'm happy to report that we had a very successful planning retreat this last fall that is described in the first part of this document. We're looking at strategies for a number of items, including fundraising, membership, and recruitment. We also are happy to report that one of our members, our treasurer, Susan Hildreth, is the new IMLS director. And as such, we have a new treasurer, Bob Doyle, and Chris Finan has rejoined us as a new trustee. We have had success this last 6 months in defending a couple of important issues involving harmful to minors laws or statutes that were passed, the Powell Books versus Kroger lawsuit, and also a challenge in Alaska involving the harmful to minors laws. Banned Books Week this year was exciting for the Freedom to Read Foundation. It was the first year that we were providing grants with the Judith Krug Fund, where we actually supported financially a number of different Banned Books Week programs and events. And those are described on page 2. I'd highly recommend to you that if you are interested in seeking one of these grants, then in a few months when the new information is available on the Freedom to Read Foundation website, that you apply for one of those. In addition to the grants that we're providing through the Krug Fund, we've also been active in trying to work with ILS programs to develop some type of ongoing education in the area of intellectual freedom and the freedom to read. And Barbara Jones has been interacting on a regular basis with those LIS programs and did so at this conference. Another important part of the Freedom to Read Foundation meetings has become our analysis of emerging issues. We think it's important that we continue to be aware not just of what is happening at this current time, but what we are likely to face in the future. One of the actions at our board meeting on Friday was that we asked our counsel, Teresa Chimera, to identify issues specifically associated with e-book privacy in libraries and the First Amendment. Because we feel this will become more and more of an issue for us, and I see you have another report on your agenda that will be dealing with a similar issue. Once again, we are providing free memberships for LIS program graduates, and we hope that those graduates will not only take advantage of that, but that they will also continue to be paying members in the future. An exciting thing that is not in the report that I'm happy to let you know about is that for the first time in the history of the foundation, our assets have reached over $1 million. So. A lot of this is due to the fact that we've changed our investment strategy over the last year or so, and the market is obviously up. One of the things I would encourage you to do, if you are not a foundation member, you should be. And I'm happy to report that we have the membership forms on the back table, or if you'd like to contact the Office for Intellectual Freedom and Barbara Jones or Jonathan Kelly, they would be happy to get you set up as a paying member. And speaking of those two, I would like to really congratulate Barbara Jones and Jonathan Kelly on the last 6 months at the office. We've been undergoing some transitions. They've been performing incredibly well along with the rest of the office, and the foundation couldn't have better staff support than it has right now. So thank you guys. Are there questions?
That's what I was going to ask now. Are there any questions? Or any discussion. Microphone number 2.
Tom Wilding, Counselor at Large. Would it Would the foundation entertain the idea of granting the free membership to students while they're before they graduate? A lot of our students take take courses that have the intellectual freedom just sort of built into the fiber of the courses, and I think hooking them in before they graduate might net quite a few members who, after they graduate, might have faded away a little bit.
Okay.
Just an idea.
Okay, we'll certainly discuss that. One of the things that we did talk about in our retreat were coming up with any kind of strategy that would increase our membership. One of the specific strategies or objectives we talked about was reaching a 5% membership level within the ALA membership itself, which seems small, but when we look at our total membership right now, that's just reaching over 1,000, we'd really like to have it up to over 4,000 within the next 2 or 3 years, and that might be a great strategy to use with that. Did I answer your question, Nan?
Is there any further discussion? Hearing no further discussion or questions, thank you so very
thank
much,
you.
Kent. I now direct you to ALA Council Document Number 30-30.1 and call upon Councilor Maggie Farrell and Vivian Pisano, co-chair, to present their report.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm not a counselor. Thank you. Following midwinter of 2010, President Camila Elire appointed an 11-member task force representing a wide spectrum of ALA constituents and chaired by Maggie Farrell and myself. We're representing the International Relations Committee and OITP Advisory Committee. Our charge was to review the work that had been done by ALA regarding traditional cultural expressions, or TCEs, and the document Librarianship and Traditional Cultural Expressions, Nurturing Understanding and Respect, and to bring forward a document to ALA Midwinter 2011. Early on, we realized we needed to define the terminology. We found that these were some very complex set of issues and spent a good part of our time defining the terminology. And you will see in the present report a definition of terms in the appendix. We also identified cultural materials as the primary focus, as librarians typically deal with the manifestations and documentation of TCEs. We also determined that it really wasn't possible at this time to develop policy recommendations that would encompass all of the issues surrounding TCEs. So the report before you provides guidelines to assist librarians in their responsibilities regarding cultural materials. It clarifies contributions libraries can make in this area and identifies some issues and concerns. Foremost was respect, honor, and collaboration, and balancing that with upholding our library values. The report is divided in 5 concept areas. They are collecting, organizing, access to or using, stewardship, and preservation. We also include a list of recommendations at the conclusion of the report. And key in our recommendations was that we recognized a real need for further education to take place within the ALA membership on TCEs and cultural materials. We have shared the draft versions with a broad spectrum of ALA constituencies, both before and during midwinter. And we've shared drafts with you, ALA Council. We have also sought feedback from the Society of American Archivists. We held a forum at midwinter on Saturday, and we have been taking all of the commentary that we've received from our distributions and incorporated that in our present report.
A little bit about the process. The task force diligently worked within a very tight 6 months time frame to address the issues in our charge. The members were actively engaged in the process and effectively worked in a virtual environment. We only had one face-to-face meeting at midwinter. And they worked within this virtual environment on very complex set of issues. The final report did cause some anxieties among our members. There was an assumption that all task force members would endorse or ascribe to every statement within the report. And some of the task force members would have liked to have gone further in policy development. Given the complexity of the many issues and the life cycle activities of cultural materials and TCEs, this just was not possible at this time. It is our hope that our report and recommendations build a foundation of understanding to move forward in developing specific policies. Although we did not ask for nor expect endorsements, I do want to point out to you that the American Indian Library Association did send a formal letter that they do not endorse the report, but they support our focus on education, inclusion, and the need for further study. Again, we want to thank the task force members for their hard work and contributions to the association. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Ms. Farrell and or Ms. Pisano? Microphone number two.
Okay, I don't have a question. My name is Sue Sheriff, and I'm the chapter counselor for Alaska and a member of the American Indian Library Association. And I have been asked to read the statement, their response, that was passed unanimously at the business meeting yesterday afternoon, Sunday, January 9th. The American Indian Library Association, AILA, does not endorse the traditional Cultural Expressions Task Force report and expresses its disappointment in the document not acknowledging the views of indigenous cultures. AILA urges ALA Council to seek ALA's participation in continued education of ALA members about issues involving traditional cultural expressions. And AILA is an affiliate of the American Library Association. It is a membership action group that addresses the library-related needs of American Indians and Alaska Natives. Members are individuals and institutions interested in the development of programs to improve Indian library, cultural, and informational services in school, public, and research libraries on reservations. AILA is also committed to disseminating information about Indian cultures, languages, values, and information needs to the library community.
Microphone number six.
Jim Neal, member of the executive board. I want to acknowledge the very positive way in which the report has been organized around important issues and the real important debates that are taking place around some of these very important topics. However, I want to restate my deep concern that the report does not address some very important principles that ALA supports in the area of U.S. copyright. I think the matters of fair use, exceptions and limitations, first sale, term limits, public domain, the fixed requirements, all embedded in U.S. copyright law, are not addressed in the report. And clearly, these are all essential to our ability as libraries and librarians to sustain effective and equitable access to information. We cannot rely on the report that the Library Copyright Alliance sent to IFLA. We must take a very clear stand on those issues as ALA.
Microphone number five.
Elizabeth Riddler, Counselor at Large. I want to commend the task force on taking a very flawed document at annual and working very hard to balance two distinctly opposed sets of values. I see this as reflected in the statement from Allah. As an association, we do have groups within us that have competing values. And this is one of the areas where people feel very passionate, and you have done your best to balance the efforts and move the ball ahead. And I think this, I had only a very short time to read this because it came to me late. But I did read it, and I said, this sounds great. And I also just quickly glanced at it again here. I was one of those with major concerns about the former document, and thank you very much.
Microphone number three.
Tom Wilding, Counselor at Large. I'm rather disturbed by the document, and I appreciate that this is just like a monumental task to be done in a very, very short amount of time. But it seems to me that while the document lays out respect as sort of one of the principles behind it, it doesn't evidence itself much in the document itself in terms of respecting the native cultures that preceded most of us in this country by quite a number of years. And I find that disturbing. I find that very disturbing, as a matter of fact. We are a multicultural society, and part of that multiculturalism is our native cultures. And I think that we owe a lot more respect to that. I understand that it conflicts with our values, but respect is one of our values as well, even though it's not expressed in the core values exactly. It sort of is an underlying value that all those values sit on. So I'm concerned about that. I'm concerned about the use of the word consult rather than collaborate very frequently in the document. Consultation is easy, and you can ignore what comes out of consultation. Collaboration means you're working together to build something that works. I don't get the sense that this was a consensus document. I get the distinct impression that it was a majority rules kind of a process. And if you look at the membership of the committee, the culture that is most primarily affected by this document is in the very, very small minority of the committee. And I think that's disturbing. I think that's probably enough.
Microphone number five.
Ling Hui Jian, Counselor at Large, and I appreciate the task force work, but I am disappointed. And as I compare this particular report with the draft report that made available to us in mid-winter 2010, I found one very important thing missing, and that is the fundamental principles similar to what Counselor Wilding was talking about. There are three distinctive words that I think the task force did not take advantage of, and I really, really would like to encourage another group, either another group of this task force, to continue working on it. Back in that draft report, there are three distinctive words: reciprocity, collaboration, and access. Those are probably the most important three words that could really express the firm position of our association. I understand the task force recommend that different groups can work on different principles, different ways of working on it, but I think those three needs to be there universally across the whole association if we really want to take a stand to respect the cultural heritage, to make sure we preserve it correctly, and to make sure that everybody has access to it. Thank you.
Microphone number four.
Christine Lind Haig, PLA counselor. I endorse this document and thank the task force for their work. I think it's important that we recognize this is a report, not a policy document, and that it's been prepared as an educational piece for the many units within ALA. In the document itself, they have five general areas that they've collected information under: the collection of information, the preservation, access, stewardship, and organization. And I think that if we adopt this or we accept this report, which is what the committee is asking, or the task force was asking us to do, that it opens the door for other ALA units to go in depth and work on the different sections. This sort of allows us to continue the discussion. It's not the final on anything. It's the first step toward opening discussion throughout the association. Thank you.
Microphone number three.
Good morning, Alexia Hudson, Pennsylvania Chapter Counselor. I commend the work of this task force. However, as a new counselor, I need some guidance and some understanding in terms of the historical process. There seems to be a lot of passion around this, and quite frankly, I've been kind of getting fragmented data on what the intention of this particular report was. So I have a couple of questions for you, one of which is, I believe that when this path started, that this was initially led by the American Indian Library Association, or at least they were the initial shepherds or stewards. And it appears as if there has been now a shift to include or encompass all entities that have some stakeholder value in preserving ethnohistory. Am I incorrect in that assumption?
Okay. Would you comment on that, Keith?
I cannot speak with authority, but that's my understanding, is what the original impetus was on the document that came to AR. And again, that effort was coordinated by OITP at that time. The at that point, WIPO was discussing the treaty on global this issue on a global level. That effort, it appears at this point, is not moving ahead quickly. And I think there was some interest in getting a document to IFLA last spring so that, in fact, it could be shared as part of this global discussion.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay, thank you for that. My follow-up question, and given that this is a report and there are no policy elements in the report, what is the expectation of council today? Is the expectation of council today to accept the report? Is the expectation that we ask that the presidential task force time period to examine the issues that Jim and other counselors and executive board members have brought to the fore be advised? So I'm not sure what our next step should be in terms of moving this process forward.
I would like to respond to that question. There is no proposal on the floor to endorse or accept the document. It is only a summary of the work of the task force that was appointed. Is there any further discussion? Microphone number six.
Carla Stoffel, Counselor at Large. I'd like to commend the task force for taking a very difficult policy area with lots of competing interests and making a real stab at laying it out for us. And I think you've done a magnificent job. That's not to say that some of the issues that have been raised shouldn't be looked at, but I think that we owe you a great debt of gratitude, and I appreciate your work.
That's great. Microphone number four.
Larry Romans, Counselor at Large. I also appreciate the work that you've done, but I certainly hope that as this issue moves forward in some other form, that there is much wider participation by Native Americans and that the focus be more on the issue of cultural expression and a little less on copyright.
Microphone number two.
Nan Blaine, Hilliard, Counselor at Large. Could you clarify then what exactly is going to happen with this? An author at the breakfast this morning mentioned he doesn't feel that there is closures for closets, that we are simply making accommodation. So what accommodation are we going to have for all the work that was done with this? I would hate to have it just shelved, and who determines what happens next?
There has been some discussion about that. One of the things is the whole issue of within ALA, where's a home for a particular endeavor? And as I indicated, OITP was involved in the development of the document that Council saw last midwinter, and that was part of the efforts that were involved with the WIPO discussions at that point. I think at this point what we would do, certainly I think there are some, the issues and the recommendations are things that need to be available, particularly for people who are grappling with these issues on a real level. I would say that the report would be made available on that portion of the OIT website, and then those would also then be essentially information on that would be circulated to others who might want to link to it, so that where this document might be useful, both as a basis for further discussion, as a basis for further planning, and possibly for further discussions about policy, the document would be available. And again, it would be a task force report. And I think there's a clear acknowledgement both in the report itself and certainly on the part of groups that have been following this, that this is probably a step in a discussion that is going to occupy us, you know, for some significant period of time.
Microphone number 5.
Pam Klipsch, Missouri Chapter Counselor. The report includes 9 recommendations, one of which is that asking the executive board to identify or create an appropriate body in the organization for continued consideration of these issues. And I think that having a home for this in the association takes more than a website and more than referring it to a particular part of our staff support. I think that it needs an association-level committee with a continuing charge, as opposed to a task force which has a limited charge for a limited amount of time. And I would hope that the executive board would move on this particular recommendation and in establishing such a group so that we can, as we traditionally have done, have a coordinating committee that brings together all of the different elements of the association that are involved in a complex issue or set of issues such as these.
Hearing no further discussion, I wish to thank Maggie Farrell and Vivian Pisano for heading up the team that put together the report. Thank you very much. I now direct you to ALA Council document number 41. I believe it is listed on the agenda as 31, however, it is correctly labeled as 41. And I call upon Councillor Michael Porter, co-chair of the Equitable Access to Electronic Content Task Force, to step to the stage and to present the report.
Thank you, President Stevens. It's a great pleasure to be here addressing my fellow councilors on ALA CD number 41, which addresses the ALA Presidential Task Force on Equitable Access to Electronic Content. Before we get started, I just wanted to say that the task force has 20 folks. I'm a co-chair with Linda Crow, and we have 2 ALA staff liaisons that are also involved with the Office for Information Technology Policy. And on behalf of all those members, we wanted to thank you for your attention to this resolution that we believe is significant for our work and for the association's work. A few things I wanted to do quickly in the short amount of time we have here is I wanted to give you a little background. I believe most of us voted to pass this resolution, so you're probably well familiar with it. But we'll do a little wrap-up, and I also wanted to talk about the results that we've seen so far, one of which we've already discussed to some extent, and that is the forming of this presidential task force. And then I wanted to inform you on the next steps that we've all agreed that need to happen so that you know what work we're doing and can be informed on that work appropriately. Before we get into that, I wanted to also on behalf of the entire task force, thank Roberta Stevens for the care with which she assembled the task force. It's a large group of people, but it's an esteemed group of our colleagues, and we take our charge very seriously because we all believe this is perhaps the most significant issue facing American libraries and the American Library Association. So just a quick background, you'll see on the second page of document 41, addresses the council resolution. We did pass this on June 29th unanimously as a council. And what we're tasked with doing is looking at the electronic content access environment and finding solutions and ways forward that will allow libraries to facilitate access to electronic content in ways that stay true to our larger missions. That's a fairly brief summary of a lot of words on this page and many other pages. There are a lot of issues that come up when we want to address something, as you'll see on another page of the document, the enormity of scope of this issue. I would say it's not a Herculean task, or certainly not a Sisyphean task, but it is a large task. However, when you look at how the resolution is structured, you'll see that there are key words that we will be considering and working on: collaboration, technology, agreements, compromise, and ALA pops up quite regularly in that because we're going to follow the principles of the organization and our profession at large. So that's what we're going to be working on. You can reference the pieces of the resolution there if you want more information on that. Another thing that's called for in addition to the task force is that the task force work with the Office for Information Technology Policy. And I've been in the board advisory meetings and the retreat that started before to help make sure that we're informed and collaborating. Another thing the committee wanted to make certain everyone knew is that we're aware of and working with the eBooks Task Force as well. We see their work as a piece of this presidential task force's work, and we see that dovetailing nicely so we can avoid some wheel reinvention and get more value out of the efforts that both of these task forces are engaged in. So you can be assured that we're taking that part of the charge seriously as well and thinking carefully about it. I also wanted to give you an update on the plans that we've taken. Because we were so careful in forming the task force, it took some extra time. And I think that that's good because it was carefully formed and the right people are involved. But that also meant that the task force has just recently formed and we had our first meeting as a task force 2 days ago here at Midwinter. At that meeting, we did some work beforehand, of course, but at that meeting, we agreed that we're going to have monthly calls to address the work that we need to accomplish, who's doing what, get things assigned. We're also going to be putting up on ALA Connect everyone that's on the task force, a brief paragraph describing why they're involved with the task force, and everyone will put bullet points that speak to their specific expertise and interests. So you'll know that those people are working on specific things related to the work of the task force that deals with the scope. So we're trying to rein the scope in and focus our work and efforts. So you'll be able to see that on ALA Connect. So I wanted to make sure everyone knew that. We got clarity on the budget as well, which was very helpful. We want to thank Mr. Fields for his assistance with that. Also wanted to inform council that we'll be having a retreat in March where we can get together in person. We're doing preparatory work so that when that meeting happens, we're ready to charge forth and begin the very serious digging in and working on this so that we have things to return back to all of you that are of substance and of use. That work that we're going to be engaged in includes an environmental scan, which will look at possibilities, existing infrastructure, and ways we can fit in with that to more effectively provide electronic content access to our library users and our communities. In addition to the environmental scan that we'll be preparing and presenting to council, we're proposing that we attach case studies. You might think of them as experiments, things that we can actually try and do, and have those included in the first version of this document that comes before you as soon as we can get that done. So that's a summary. Happy to hear questions.
Is there any discussion? Are there any questions for Mr. Porter? Microphone number two.
Sue Kam, Counselor at Large. There are three ways that I can see accessibility, the word accessibility defined. One is physical accessibility, people with who are in wheelchairs, people who use assistive devices like canes and crutches. Second is financial accessibility. Mm-hmm. And everyone knows, the library community is reeling from budget cuts, which means that we have to sort of look carefully at the costs of what we're offering our public. And the third is equality in terms of access in terms of filters, which is an intellectual freedom issue, and I think ISC has dealt with that over these many years. So I'm just wondering whether the task force report will look into those three definitions of accessibility and make recommendations on how they can be implemented.
I've written those three points down, and we'll take that to the task force and be sure that they're addressed to some extent in the reports that will be evolving. I would also ask that you please read, all of you, but particularly for this issue, please read that with a lens to find those points. And if you have any suggestions or ways to improve it, we need to hear that from all of us.
Microphone number two.
Elizabeth Riddler, Counselor at Large. I'm just curious, is anybody on the task force actually expert in assistive technology?
I don't know the answer to that, though I'm making a note and can check back.
Do you remember which two are they listed here? We had two nominations from ASCLA.
Okay.
And if you are asking me to recall who were the two, I can't remember. But one of the reasons, as Michael pointed out, that it took longer to get this set up than one might expect is we kept going back and back and back to people to make sure that we were covering all the stakeholders. So I know that we reached out to ASCLA, and I know we have someone on this task force from that organization.
Roberta, Keith has clarified that ASCLA came to us with nominees Barbara Mates and Axel Shemetsky, and they are on the task force, and those are the two that ASCLA...
Excuse me, I read through very quickly and I missed Barbara, but that's wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're certainly welcome. Are there any further questions? Seeing no further questions, I thank Michael Porter for his report. The chair now refers you to ALA Council Document Number 13 and 13.2 and calls on ALA Treasurer James Neal to present his report. Jim.
Thank you, Roberta. You have in front of you Document 13.1, which is my transmittal to you from early January, reporting the results of my meeting with the auditors for the fiscal year 10 financial year. Also sharing with you some basic results from our budget experience of that period. I can also affirm that the Finance and Audit Committee met this morning with the representatives of Grant Thornton to review the financial audit for fiscal year 10. And we will be recommending acceptance of that audit to the Executive Board this afternoon. As I said in my message to you, I am very pleased to report that the result of the audit is an unqualified opinion of no material weaknesses and no significant deficiencies. It is a clean and very successful outcome, and as a result, there will be no management letter. That is not necessary when those two conditions do not exist. I must commend the extraordinary diligence, expertise, and commitment of the ALA financial team that produced this very, very positive result. Greg Calloway, Russ Wadowski, Joanne Pack, Jennifer Tam, and Keith Brown. This is a great result. I've also shared with you a document 13.2, which is a very detailed outline of the financial results from fiscal year 10. I encourage you to look at them as your time allows, but I most importantly encourage you to be in touch with me by email or by telephone or in person if you have questions or issues you'd like to address in terms of the ALA budget. This reports our fiscal year 10. And what I'd like to turn to now is a brief highlight of some of those financial results. And I'll turn to the document CD13, and you'll see these slides posted on the screen as we proceed. We are dealing with the audited financial statements as a result of fiscal year 10. You'll see on this first screen in fiscal year 10, as compared with fiscal year 9, the revenues and expenses of the organization. And you can see that we have an improved situation with a net income from operations. That's the entire association, including divisions and roundtables, of $2.280 million. This is a very positive and important result. If we look at the total revenues in a little bit more detail, you can see that the one area of particular note is the decline in the revenue from grants and awards. To some extent, this is a product of timing, when grants are sent out and when the results are received from those grant applications. But in the full accounting for fiscal year 10, you can see that we do have a downward result in that revenue category. And you can see, next slide, how our revenues have done over the last 10-year period. Clearly, until the current economic situation hit us, that is early 2008, late 2007, and we've had some modest step down across the ALA revenues. We also are concerned, obviously, is not how much money we take in, but how much money we spend. And I think one of the hallmarks of our work on the budget side at ALA over the last couple of years has been our ability to right-size our expenses to align with our revenue. And you can see that in all the various important categories of our overall ALA expenses, we have made the appropriate adjustments. And in fact, our expenses are down at a higher percentage than the revenues. So I think this is a very, very accommodating budget process that we've been through. You can see again on the next slide that our expense pattern over the last 10 years looks very much like the revenue pattern. We also have another lens with which we look at the health of the association, and that is the comparison of our assets and our liabilities. You can see here what that total picture looks like with a net asset improvement last year, $26.5 million, and we've moved up this year to $29.6 million. Again, the total ALA assets can be looked at in a little bit more detail. The decline in grants, represents an important piece of explaining the adjustment in the assets. And if we turn to the liabilities, again, the $3.3 million is reflective of grants activities. So you can see that in the larger ALA picture, all other elements are basically stable in terms of our assets and liabilities, but we are very much seeing some movement from year to year in terms of the grant activities. Another interesting snapshot is what is our member equity in the net assets of the association. That is, if we took all our money up and divided it up among all the members, how much would we each have? And no, you cannot send in a request for a check. But you can see how that has varied over time, and clearly when the stock market was up, we had, but now we are on an upward scale, and as we find ourselves at the end of fiscal year 10, we each own $486.13 of this association. Now let me turn you down to the general fund revenues. These are the aspects of the association that deal with member services, publishing, conference activities, dues. That's right. You can see here that in fiscal year 10, our revenues were $26,425. We had some modest decrease in conference, graphics, and
and interest revenue, but our dues generally were on target, and our publishing did improve. I think these are very good results in the context of the economic conditions that we're working through. The general fund revenue decline was just over $500,000. And again, here in the chart, you can see how that process has gone over the last 10 years. This very much looks like the overall ALA budget pattern. I want to emphasize how important the annual conference is to our net revenue. What you'll see here is a chart that describes from 2005 to 2011, which is the projected revenue situation, that we had a net profit of contribution margin of 43.3% coming out of the annual conference. And after the overhead rate is applied to conference revenue, we had a net revenue from the annual conference of 17.2%. That, I think, is a sort of a slowly declining number, and one that we need to keep our focus on. Midwinter, which is, I think, perhaps more important for us to look at this point, given the discussions we're having, again, you see what the contribution margin is. That is what the total profit was. And then after the overhead rate is applied, you can see that we're down at a very low level in terms of the net revenue coming out of Midwinter. I want to emphasize, however, that 27.9% contribution margin is absolutely essential, because that overhead revenue is applied to the important work of the association, to those units which do not have and do not generate a revenue. We also need to remember that publishing plays a very important part in this arena as well, because based on their revenue, their positive revenue, they also pay an overhead rate. And you can see here how that has gone over the last 5 years in terms of the net margins achieved by publishing and the net margins achieved by our meetings and conferences. I think we're holding our own, but over the last 5 years, there has been some modest decline. These are things that we need to be very, very supportive of. I've talked about the term overhead rate. It's very important to understand what that pays for. And here are some of the areas that are critical in terms of our support from overhead. The communications of the organization, all of the member offices that support our work, the Washington office, Office of Diversity, Office of Intellectual Freedom, and so forth, the executive office and governance, and just the general and administrative costs of the organization. These are supported by overhead, and our ability to generate revenue out of our publishing and our conference programs allows us to do all of those other important things that are critical to member support. Let me also reference general fund expenses. We can see here that we made appropriate adjustments in the meeting and conference area and in the publications area, and we ended up with a general decline in our expenses during this period, $320,000 less than the previous year. And again, the chart shows how that has fared over the last 10 years, where we had that very significant growth into the mid part of the decade, and we've been managing the decline through reduction in expenses during that period as well. And if we combine these two charts, and I think this is one of the most telling charts that I will show you, is how agile this association has been in managing its expenses in response to the revenues that we project and the revenues that we are experiencing. This is really important for us as a council to understand in terms of our ability to deal with this. As you know, we began fiscal year 10 with a projection that we would face a $2 million budget shortfall. And we had outlined a series of ways in which we would adjust our expenses, open positions, reduction in publishing expenses, reduction in travel. We also planned for 2 weeks of furlough, and the board did authorize $400,000 to be taken out of our reserve funds to meet that $2 million budget shortfall. But as we know, we were very successful in managing our budget. The staff did experience 1 week of furlough. That second week of furlough was canceled. And in fact, the funds were restored to staff for the salary and interest that they did not receive during that first week of furlough. We also did not take down any of our funds from reserves. These, I thought, were extremely important results that we were able to manage over the course of the year. I also want to emphasize the critical budget relationship between ALA and the divisions. If we were to apply that overhead rate that we use in our budget work across the full budgets of the divisions, you can see that the indirect cost revenue to ALA would be something in the $5.5 million level. But per the operating agreement, that overhead rate is applied 50% of the income from publishing activities and 100% of the income from meetings and conferences activity. So, in fact, the overhead paid by the divisions is $1.435 million. And so you can see that the general fund does provide some important support to the tune of $4.288 million to the work of the divisions, including the support we provide to the small division subsidy. As a result, you can see the division results here in terms of the revenues. Thanks to the national conferences of the divisions, we were able to achieve a $2 million positive net revenue in the work of the divisions. And in expenses, you can see the increase was only $443,000. So on the division side, we had a very, very good year. And, of course, we always have to remember that cycle of two national conferences, one national conference. That has an impact both in terms of this snapshot, but also in terms of the overhead revenue that accrues to ALA. It's also important, I think, to look at the roundtables that also experienced a net, a positive year with $163,000 in net revenue. As we heard yesterday, our endowment fund continues to improve in a very significant way. This reports at the end of the fiscal year that we had returned to $31.2 million in terms of our long-term investment fund. And, of course, Dan, when he spoke to you at the information session, indicated that we've even seen significant growth beyond that. This is a very, very important asset to protect and ensure the long-term health, financial health, of the association. So let me conclude by highlighting what I think are some important issues as we look forward to the fiscal year 12 budget. As has been referenced here several times, we all are experiencing some extremely challenging conditions with our library budgets. We will, in fact, lag the economic recovery. We're not clear that the political environment in Washington at this point is as entirely supportive of library needs as it needs to be, therefore the importance of continuing to advocate for the financial support of libraries. And we know that sitting out there, perhaps untested at this point, are the severe financial problems at the state and local levels, particularly as the federal funds begin to temporary federal funds begin to be pulled out. We think there will be some continued softness in conference revenue, that although we're going to be in a year of two division national conferences, we are planning no operational budget increases in the general income categories, general budget categories, but because staff have not had a staff salary increase for 3 years, and that fiscal year 12 would be the fourth year of no salary increase, we have put into the budget planning instructions the consideration of a 2% salary pool for the staff at ALA. I think we have to work very hard to look at our assets, particularly our long-term investment fund, making sure that it is working as hard as it can to support our strategic priorities. And so, as Dan indicated, we will be coming to you, I as treasurer will be coming to you, to propose a revision in our spend policy from our endowments. We at universities and in public library foundations very often use a multi-quarter rolling average to determine how much we will pay out from our endowments. We would like to move to that within ALA. That will give us much more transparency in terms of where the money is coming from, how it's determined, It will make it much more predictable. So at this point in the budget planning process, we'll know how much endowment revenue we have to work with in ALA and each of the divisions. And in fact, we will have more money coming out of our endowments that can be used to invest in the work of the association. I think this is a critical and positive change that I hope you will support as we move forward. I want us to think about some critical future issues. Clearly, with our 2015 plan, we want to make sure that we invest in our strategic priorities. I argue if you want to really look at an organization's strategic plan, you look at its budget, because that budget will tell you what that organization thinks is important. We've got to invest in new systems and services. We, the executive board, authorized the creation of a $1 million technology fund, drawing down funds out of our reserves. And this is enabling us to put in a new financial management system and to improve the website and the technologies that support member services. This will be an ongoing challenge. We are rethinking the role of midwinter meetings, but let's keep in mind very important overhead that is paid as a result of the revenue from midwinter that supports the work of the larger association. We're moving aggressively from print to electronic publishing, distribution, and business models. This has required some investment, but I think will in the long run be a very positive change for the association. We are concerned about membership, and we are particularly concerned, as we noted, about organizational membership, and we are watching very carefully divisional membership as individual members of the association make hard choices in terms of where they invest their membership dollars. I mentioned the new spending payout policy, and we continue to explore new business opportunities. How can we take the products and services that we currently provide, penetrate the current people who we work with, but to look at a more diversified global marketplace for the things that we do? And are there some new products and services that we should be looking at? Clearly, we should be charging $25 for everyone who sits on the aisles here in council. 50 cents per minute to plug in your cords into the electricity. No, that's not the type of experimentation we're looking at. But I think there are some important assets that we have as an association that we can leverage and turn into more revenue and greater impact for the association. Do you have any questions?
Microphone number two.
Nan Blaine Hilliard, Counselor at Large. Jim, thank you for the wonderful report, and I appreciate the tremendous effort that goes in on the part of all staff to being sure that the precariousness of income and outgo, everything balances and works really well. And I appreciate also your emphasis on the ALA's assets, assets including obviously the staff as well as our financial assets. One kind of hidden thing that most members never see, but when you're on the executive board, you do get an opportunity. If you work for ALA, you get an opportunity is to see one of our biggest assets, and that is the physical property that we own in Chicago. An ongoing concern that I mentioned when I was on the executive board is the facilities maintenance of an aging building, one that And those of us who've worked in old libraries understand you need to keep looking at your physical facilities. This, right now, the economic climate is not good. It would be looked at as very self-serving to be investing a whole lot of money in doing something about our headquarters property. But I very much hope that it is on the long, long range so that you don't wake up in 5 years and find out that your building is crumbling around you.
Yes, I would say that the finance committees and the executive board are very cognizant of that issue. I think we do choose on an annual basis to make some very modest investments in the maintenance of our space. So we're trying to make sure that we don't create extraordinary issues and problems. We need to remember that we also have two other facilities now that we need to think about in terms of the Washington office and the Choice Building in Connecticut.
Microphone number five.
Mary Bibelow, Counselor at Large, I too wish to congratulate you on such an inspiring report. It seems as if you have some very creative ideas about certain areas of the budget. And so, therefore, I want to ask you this question about the endowment fund. How do you determine whether to withdraw finances from the endowment under what, do you have a a formula that determine when you're going to take money out of the endowment fund, and how much do you determine beforehand how much you're going to take out of the endowment fund? And this, would you elaborate a little more on the way the universities, plan their endowment?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. The endowment fund is the principal of the endowment fund. That is, the money that we have invested is never, well, I wouldn't say it's never touched. This association does not withdraw money from its principal. So the base on which the money we have put into the endowment stays in the endowment, and hopefully as a result of our effective investment, grows. Up to now, I think we have used the interest and dividends from the endowments, less the expenses associated with the activities that those endowments support, and we have used that to support the work of the association, to pay for a scholarship, to pay for an award, to fund a program, and so forth. So we never touch the principal. We use the interest and dividends to pay for what that endowment is supposed to pay for. What we're proposing is to use a different model, which says we're going to establish a payout percentage. I'm going to use one just for illustrative purposes. Let's say 3.5%. So if we have $1 million in endowment, we're going to say we are going to guarantee a 3.5% payout, which means $35,000 will be available to be used next year to fund the work of the association. And then over a 5-year period, that endowment will be going up, I hope. But we will then take that moving average of the value of the endowment, and then each year we'll go in and say, well, that 3.5% can be increased to 3.7%, or because the endowment did not do well, needs to be decreased to 3.4%. And that then allows us at the beginning of the budget planning period to know exactly how many dollars we have to work with going forward. That is how many public library foundations and many universities operate their endowment revenue. So I hope that helps, Mary. Thank you.
Microphone number 2.
Joseph Egan, member of the executive board. I just wanted to point out on the final slide that the executive board is also concerned about roundtable membership.
Yes.
We're aware that roundtable membership is really struggling, and that's an important thing. Yesterday, I had a question from a personal member about the ALTAF subsidy in the future of ALTAF in terms of their relocation to Chicago. And Jim, I don't know whether you can address that or Keith, but I'm wondering, and I was not able to answer that question.
I'm going to turn to Keith to do that.
Yeah.
Let me speak to the roundtable. I don't want to say that we're not unconcerned about general membership, division membership, roundtable membership. Roundtable membership actually is holding up well. I wanted to say that. It's not going down at the precipitative level that we're beginning to see with divisional. So I don't want to say that we're ignoring roundtables, but we're particularly concerned about the ones that are going down pretty rapidly.
Right.
Okay. But ALTAF.
Two aspects to the question, Joseph, that you asked. First is that both ASCLA and ALTAF have been receiving subsidies. At one point, YALSA was already receiving a subsidy, and due to the efforts of YALSA leadership and membership growth there, they have no longer are no longer in a position where they require a subsidy. At the point when we discussed the merger between ALTA and FALUSA, our goal from the beginning was to create a vibrant division that would have a growing membership and would be able to acquire the resources that it needed in order to no longer require small division support, but in fact to be able to be, for instance, able to build some assets, and which it could then reinvest in a stronger program of service. Some of the conditions we discussed as part of this merger are that with the merger, Sally Reed, the director of FLUSA, would serve as the director of the new division, and that the division would remain in Philadelphia until such time as the leadership changed. And so what we will do is then re-examine that that point, and I think our plan has always been that at some point in the future that ALTAF would return to Chicago. Obviously, if you have good leadership, that's one of the most critical components of the success of any program. ALTAF is making progress. We're probably looking at a situation where there will be a small division support provided for a couple more years, but it is my expectation that ALTAF is going to be sufficiently successful that that will be a case only for a couple of years. In the case of ASCLA, we're looking at the development of some business plans. As a former ASCLA member and a former ASCLA board member, nothing would give me greater pleasure than an ASCLA that was hugely profitable and able to invest funds in services to serve its constituency. So we're working on both of the small divisions to make them big divisions.
Microphone number 5.
Elizabeth Riddler, Councillor at Large. Thank you very much for the explanation of the new spending payout policy suggestion.
It has not been approved.
No, I know that. What I'm asking, though, is as we move towards that, that you gave an understandable explanation here on the floor. For those of us who are non-techies or not non-financial experts, please, please, please make sure you get that in print so that we can appreciate what you're trying to do, and thank you very much.
Okay. We will make sure that happens.
Microphone number 5.
Mary Bibelow, Councillor at Large. I appreciated your explanation of how the endowment works and how the future plans that you're proposing will, you know, enhance the handling of the endowment fund. I thank you very much for that. But I want to ask this question. Did you say that you had planned in the budget that you would have the staff recommend 2% or 2.5%?
2%, Mary.
2%?
A 2% salary pool would be created for staff salary increases in fiscal year 12.
Okay. Can't we raise it a little higher? They do work awful hard.
We agree. They work extremely hard and very successfully on behalf of us. I think we're trying to be sensitive to not only what's going on in the larger library community in terms of compensation, but also trying to recognize that we should not go into a fourth year of no salary increase.
Microphone number 4.
Mario Gonzalez, Councillor at Large. Jim, I think the rolling average that you were talking about is an excellent idea. I don't know if you mentioned a 3-year rolling average. And this is based on the
It's a 20-quarter rolling average.
So a 5-year rolling average. Based on the interest generated by the corpus of our endowment. I have two questions. One is, who will determine that average? Is that coming from the endowment trustees to recommend to the executive board?
Yes.
The other question is that I would urge them to take a look at what point in the market would that average be determined? Because historically, for example, the market does very bad in September and very good in December, and those just averages over the years. So it would be important for us, in order to plan ahead, that we look at that rolling average determination for the same time every year.
I agree, Mario. We have come through a process where we have looked at a variety of ways in which we could approach this. Now, having affirmed that this 20-quarter rolling average is the right strategy, we have the staff working with our financial advisors to model several ways in which we might establish that initial percentage
and then to evaluate it in ways that are respectful of sustaining our financial health, but also with the goal of trying to increase the amount of revenue available to the work of the association.
Seeing no further questions, we're going to move forward. And I am asking Jim to present the FY 2012 programmatic priorities for your consideration.
As is required by ALA policy, in order to launch the fiscal year 12 budget planning process, we need for council to endorse the programmatic priorities. We will display those on the screen. And the motion that we will ask you to consider is the ALA Council approves the following programmatic priorities in line with the ALA Ahead to 2015 strategic plan and as a guide in the preparation of the fiscal year 2012 budget. They are listed on the screen.
Is there any discussion? Hearing no discussion, we will move forward to a vote. Is there discussion?
1 second.
I apologize. That motion is in error because, in fact, transforming libraries needs to be added to that list. And I do, if the projectionist can make that adjustment. That was a new goal area that was added as part of the 2015 planning process, and the board felt that that was significant enough that it needed to also be incorporated into the programmatic priorities. Sorry, Mr. Neal.
So as modified.
Okay. Hearing no further discussion, we will move forward with the motion with the addition of transformation.
Roberta.
It's not up. Okay. I see transform libraries.
Six.
I'm sorry. I could not see you.
That's
the
okay.
Lights are very bright here.
Okay.
Microphone number six.
Thank you, Roberta. Camilla, Alita, and I am ALA Executive Board. Keith, can you tell me or us where the membership engagement will fall in these bullets? Is it under the, organizational excellence?
Organizational excellence, I think.
Great. Okay.
And that is transforming libraries.
Yeah, transforming. They have finally lowered the lights so you can actually see you. Okay. Microphone number two.
Elizabeth Riddler, Councillor at Large. Just question. Did we actually get this?
Yes.
Because I don't... See it.
And we need to change transform to transforming libraries.
Does anybody see it in their documents? No, we didn't get it.
It's in my document 13.1. It's the first item. It needs to be modified, transforming libraries.
13.1?
Yes.
Page 2.
Where in 13.1?
Page 2 of 13.1.
That is correct.
Transforming libraries is now appearing on the screen as well. Hearing no further discussion, we will move forward with a vote on the motion with the addition of transforming libraries. All those in favor, please raise one hand. All those opposed, please raise one hand. The motion carries. Please mark your ballot, programmatic priorities. Thank you very much, Jim. Let's give Jim a hand. Jim and all of the staff in the ALA organization who have worked so hard to keep our budget in such good shape. Thank you, Keith, and thank you to your staff. We are now at 11:45. In terms of new business, we have eliminated a number of the resolutions. We still have resolution number 32 revised on the agenda. We have number 38 revised on the agenda. Number 39, council document number 39. Excuse me one moment. I would like to ask for your support for our moving the honorary membership next, and then in the remaining time, deal with the new business. Do I have your agreement for that? I think we can take a short, well, we don't have that much time because we break at 12:15. So we're going to go ahead with the honorary membership. The chair now calls upon Camilla O'Leary, ALA immediate past president, to present for your consideration the ALA Executive Board's nomination for honorary membership in ALA. Well, they've got it two ways. Okay, I'm going to read this. Honorary membership is the highest honor this association can bestow upon an individual. Honorary membership may be conferred on a living citizen of any country whose contribution to librarianship or a closely related field is so outstanding that it is of a lasting importance to the advancement of the whole field of library service. It is intended to reflect honor upon the ALA as well as upon the individual. The criteria for honorary membership are: the person should be so outstanding that there can be no question about his or her suitability. The designation should recognize the contribution of an individual per se rather than that of an individual representing the accomplishments of many. The person elected to honorary membership should be of such caliber as to reflect honor upon ALA by this designation. Honorary membership should be conferred because of a contribution of more than passing interest and of more than local or regional achievement. The contribution may be to librarianship or to a closely related field. The recipient may be a librarian or a person in a related field. Well, what happened is this, and then when I, this was then that I was told to me. So at this point, I'm going to move forward. Okay, Camilla, are you ready? We're going to have to do a little conferring here. Excuse me. My apologies, we have some staging conflicts here that we're trying to get taken care of and are now resolved. The next item, okay. Okay, the next item on the agenda for your consideration, I've already gone through this. I would like to review the procedures. I think I've already gone through this. These procedures were sent to you via the ALA Council electronic list on December 20th, 2010, and are available in ALA Council document number 24. There is one nomination being presented to you today. Council will be given an opportunity to discuss the nomination. If Council indicates that it wishes to hold a debate on the merits of the candidate, Council will move into closed session in accordance with ALA Open Meetings Policy number 7.4.4, which stipulates that discussion of matters affecting the privacy of individuals be held in closed session. All observers and members of the press will be asked to vacate the room. Please note that we do not need to move into closed session in order to hear comments in support of a nomination. At this point, I would like to ask if any counselor wishes to debate the nomination, and you should have the nomination. If so, please raise one of your hands. Okay, seeing no hands raised, we will move forward with the honorary membership nomination. All individuals. Okay. Okay, the chair now calls upon Camilla O'Leary, at last, ALA immediate past president, to present for your consideration the ALA Executive Board's nomination for honorary membership in ALA. And I'm scooting over to Camilla.
Thank you very much, Roberta. Roberta was reading to you about what the honorary membership is, and it's the highest honor this association can bestow upon this individual. I'm not sure where she was cut off, so I'm going to the criteria. Okay. So I'm going to reread parts of this. The criteria for honorary membership are: the person should be so outstanding that there can be no question about his or her suitability. The designation should recognize the contribution of an individual per se rather than an individual representing the accomplishments of many. The person elected to honorary membership should be such caliber as to reflect honor upon ALA by this designation. Honorary membership should be conferred because of a contribution of more than a passing interest and of more than a local, national, or regional achievement. The contribution may be to librarianship or to a closely related field. The recipient may be a librarian or a person in a related field. In accordance with Bylaw Article 1, Section 1.A.7, and policy 2.1, I present for your consideration the name of Johannes Gebregiorgis. Johannes Gebregiorgis is nominated in recognition of his founding Ethiopia Reads, a nonprofit organization that is establishing children's libraries in Ethiopia and publishing bilingual and trilingual children's books, thereby providing the children an opportunity to learn the love of reading and increasing literacy in an entire nation. On behalf of the ALA Executive Board, I move that an honorary membership be bestowed upon Johannes Gebregiorgis.
Is there any discussion? Hearing no discussion, we will move forward with a vote. All those in favor of the honorary membership of Johannes Gebregiorgis, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion carries. Please mark your ballot, honorary membership. We are now at 5 to 12. A break had been built in. It makes no sense to me for us to do a break for 20 minutes. Shall we continue forward? I'm assuming we will continue forward with business. Okay. All right. We will now take up the new business item. Council document number 32. Resolution on notifying conference and meeting attendees of hotels named on the Do Not Patronize list. We heard the resolve clauses read yesterday, and the resolution was postponed until ALA's legal counsel could be present. Will Paula Gettert please step up to a microphone? Microphone number 4.
Good morning. Would you like me to speak to the issue or to be available to address questions?
I would like you to speak to the issue. There were some legal concerns that were expressed yesterday, and I would like you to address those. In terms of antitrust.
Let me tell you, I'll start by telling you what I am not going to do. What I am not going to do in an open forum is to make absolute statements or give absolute opinions about when calls for boycotts are illegal. And I'm not going to do that because various kinds of calls have already been made on ALA listservs. And the last thing I am going to do in an open forum is opine on whether they are absolutely illegal. What I'd like to do is lay out just very briefly how the antitrust law works in this area and let you know what my advice to ALA is on this. The antitrust laws prohibit boycotts for commercial purposes. Unions are exempt from those antitrust laws. Associations are not exempt from those antitrust laws. Antitrust laws are both federal and state laws, so they're enforced by the Department of Justice, the FTC, and individual state attorney generals. The antitrust laws carry not only harsh civil penalties, but also criminal penalties. For this reason, most association counsel take a slightly more conservative rather than a slightly more aggressive view in counseling our clients on antitrust matters, because we never want to risk criminal penalties for the board, for leadership, and so on. Whether an association's support of a call for a boycott of a hotel would be considered a commercial boycott is something on which lawyers could disagree. Indeed, I do disagree with certain union attorneys. But my advice to ALA on the subject is to stop short of calling for a commercial boycott of hotels. ALA can provide information about what hotels are on do not patronize lists, but it should be done in a context which stops short of calling for a commercial boycott.
Are there any questions? We have a motion on the floor. Okay. Microphone number 5.
Thank you. Charles Forrest, Lama Division Counselor. I just wondered yesterday whether if the association distributes this kind of information to its membership, is there a reasonable expectation then that the members will act on that information and you know, not patronize those hotels?
Microphone number... Okay, Paula?
One of the issues with the antitrust laws is that there is rarely an instance in the last 40 or 50 years where people overtly disobey the antitrust laws. You know, everyone knows what they say, and most antitrust prosecutions are brought on the basis of implications, of signals, of sub rosa messages, so that antitrust does rely in great part on the hidden meaning of people's actions. An overt violation of the antitrust laws is not necessary to have an antitrust prosecution. As your attorney, it would be my preference that you stay 3 feet away from the antitrust law. I am here to help protect you, but I am also here to help you accomplish your goals. So if it is the desire of this body to provide information about which hotels are on do not patronize lists, I would hope that you would let me frame that provision of information in a way that would protect the organization and avoid an accusation of implications.
Microphone number 3.
Carrie Gardner at large. I want to extend my thanks to everyone in this room for engaging in this debate. Just like the online discussion that took place around TSA activities, I think this debate is healthy for the membership. My comments include the following, that the provision of do not patronize lists have no commercial purposes, that we are asking that ALA members be provided with information and that the provision of these lists do not in any way call for any commercial boycotts. Thank you.
Microphone number 6.
Tiffany Connor, CERT counselor. I just wanted to rise and let you all know that CERT does speak in favor of this resolution very strongly as a point of information for its members, something that ALA does need to provide to them as much as possible. Thank you.
Microphone number three.
Christine Lindhage, PLA counselor. I speak in opposition to this resolution. I don't believe that ALA should take on a responsibility of notifying members of things that are of concern to those members in particular. 75% of our members are not members of unions. I would think that the 25% plus or so, I don't know what the exact number was, that they would take that as a personal responsibility. If ALA is to publicize do not patronize lists for hotels, are we going to do the same thing for restaurants, for vendors that our members use to purchase library materials or other things, for travel organizations that we might also use? When you think of other groups in our association that might have special interests, vegans, people who are Jewish and want to eat kosher, these are personal decisions, and I would think that the people concerned about those things would take personal responsibility for investigating the hotels, the restaurants, and so forth that they're using. So I think it's a personal responsibility of our membership to do that and not the associations. Thank you.
Microphone number six.
Aaron, the librarian, Aaron Dobbs, counselor at large. Sorry about that. Like I said at the end of council forum last night, this might be better addressed if we provided information on how to find information about do not patronize lists. This is a very specific Band-Aid that could be addressed in a broader measure, with a broader measure, providing information on finding the information, which steps us back beyond the 3 feet line, hopefully, that Paula was referencing from our antitrust lines. So I would say pass the information on how to find the information. Don't pass the information which is fungible, which is changeable, which will change daily. Thank you.
Microphone number two.
Elizabeth Riddler, counselor at large, in support of what Aaron Dobbs was saying. I think an FAQ in how to find this information would be valuable. I mean, we're librarians, we're in the information-finding business. However, I do feel that publishing a specific list inevitably has a chilling effect. No matter how one says it is only provided as information. If it is provided as information by ALA as an organization, there is an implicit assumption that ALA is in support of a particular list, which may not be the case. And I am listening to what our lawyer is saying about covert versus overt action. And I think that the resolution takes us very close to the line. Thank you.
Microphone number three.
Nick Buron, excuse me, Nick Buron, Yalsa counselor. I am very much in favor of our members having as much information about what's going on at hotels they're staying at and hotels that we have contracted with. I have two things that make me uncomfortable, and one of them is that we're using a third party's do not patronize list, and so we are bound by their by what they decide gets put on. And from my understanding is that if a union contract with a hotel has expired with the union and they're just still in negotiations, that they could still be put on a do not patronize list. Again, I think it's important to get information out there all the time about hotels and other places that we contract with. But this to me seems that we are indeed, like Mary said, we're riding the line a little too much with our legal status. Thank you.
Microphone number four.
Mario Gonzalez, counselor at large. I'm still very confused about the ambiguity of the wording here. It says if a hotel is on the do not patronize list, and I'm taking two positions on it. One is that a hotel that's not part of our housing because it doesn't say that in this resolution. If it's not part of our housing, then I agree with Councillor Dobbs about having the membership take a look at this at somewhere where they can find the information of do not patronize. If the hotel is part of our housing, I don't know how that makes the association look that we are actually using that hotel for part of our housing stock and saying do not patronize. That does not make us look very good.
Microphone number 5.
Mary Biblow, Councillor at Large. I'm very disturbed about our position on information. We advertise and we publicize that we provide information. If we can provide information to the general public, why can't we provide information to our membership at the time you sent out the information asking us to fill out registration forms, information telling us about shuttle buses that'll be at the bus station, the arrival points, about information about handicapped people? What are we afraid of? It's not violating anything. This, to me, is just general information that we're passing on to our membership. I don't understand why we're having such a long debate on this question. We have the responsibility that we are an information organization. And why should we neglect our membership when it comes down to them making personal decisions about where they want to stay? Thank you.
Microphone number 2.
Did Dennis LaLuke, Councillor at Large, even though I was disturbed by the phone call that I received prior to Christmas, and I'm also in agreement with many of the comments that have been made thus far, the only thing that really concerns me about this is if we would pass this, if we would approve this, does it face a severe financial obligation on ALA? I have a feeling I know the answer to that, but I want to address this to Keith. I don't want to vote for anything that's going to place undue financial obligation on the organization.
Keith?
I want to thank Mary and Paula for digging up the contract and doing some research. We are currently, in the case of the Hyatt, under contract for 4,300 room nights. And if we and we're committed to a certain percentage of that, if we fall below that threshold, which is 70%, we're obligated to pay penalties. And we are in that situation currently. The penalties are for every 43 room nights that we fall, which is 1% of the base amount, ALA is liable for $8,000. So if, in fact, we were to drop by 10% below the threshold, that would be $80,000. And just to give you a sense, we do not know at this point exactly where we're going to land. We spend a lot of time, we run audits to find out if ALA people have booked rooms outside of the block and attempt to get those included. But this is a situation where we're starting out with a likely liability on this. And if I could make one other comment since I'm here, and that is that, and again, this is, I offered this as how I would deal with this. To me, to distribute someone else's list is different from saying, you know, if you want information on labor negotiations and directing them to someone else's list, to me, are two different things. And of the two of those, I think that the second one would be my personal recommendation in light of the advice that we've received from Paula. And I do not believe that that's what this says. But in terms of what would have to be you don't want to be obligated to do something that places us in legal jeopardy, and I'm sorry for.
Microphone number 4.
Doc Roth, Councillor at Large. As a school librarian, I'm a member of a union, and I generally, my initial impulse is to support unions. The difficulty I have with this, or one of the difficulties I have with this, is that it's someone else's list. I don't know who is writing this list. I don't know what criteria they are using for writing the list. I don't know what, beneficent or malevolent motives they might have for placing someone on this list. And I would prefer that ALA not be placed in the position of sending out such unknown, a list based on such unknown sources. Thank you.
I would like to bring your attention to the fact we have five minutes remaining in this session, and we do have an executive board session coming up at 12:30. Okay. Microphone number 3.
Mary Mallory, Counselor at Large. I will probably vote for the resolution, but as an alternative, I wondered if the AFL-CIO/ALA Joint Committee on Library Service to Labor Groups or CERT could take responsibility for this, and I haven't forgotten the goal to speak with one voice for ALA, but I just wondered if either of those two groups would take this on and do this for us and then table the resolution. Just an idea. Thank you.
Microphone number 7.
Tom Wilding, Counselor at Large. I want to move to amend this by replacing the resolve clause in its entirety with ALA include information on finding do not patronize information in registration packets or other registration information. And it's over there already.
We have a motion to amend the resolve clause. Do we have a second?
Seconded.
Okay. All discussion at this point is to the amendment. Seeing, Steve, you're not at the microphone, I take it. Okay. Seeing no one at a microphone to okay. I think Larry actually got up first. Microphone number 4.
Larry Romans. I'm not sure I understand what registration packet is. If it's the packet you get at registration, then it's too late. I like the notion of this, but I need some information about what the mover's really talking about.
Microphone number 5.
Steve Butzel, New Hampshire Chapter Counselor. I imagine that there's probably everyone in this room who is against unfair and unreasonable labor practices. So I doubt there are many people here who want to support unfair labor practices. Nevertheless, speaking to the amendment, I don't think we should pass anything until our lawyer were to present specific details about what would be legally safe to do. And at that point, we can decide, all right, let's do it or let's not. I don't think it's useful to improvise on this issue.
Is there anyone at a microphone on this amendment?
I never got to speak to it.
I'm sorry. My apologies, Tom. Would
That's
you
right.
like to speak to the amendment?
Yes, please. Of course. I just think that this is a pretty safe thing. I have no problem at all asking Paula to come to a microphone and tell us whether this is safer. I think it was more or less in the spirit of what Keith was trying to say. And I would be delighted if the executive director had the permission of the body to wordsmith that thing so that it gets into the right place. Obviously, registration information was the wrong place. It's really hotel booking information that is more the issue. But we did it on the fly. And
I'm very concerned because we are running out of time, and so I want to confer for one moment. I'm going to express a concern that there's a big difference between booking and registration. But I'm also going to ask your indulgence and ask Paula if she will speak to both of those possibilities.
I would not read the amendment to apply to booking hotels. I would read it as applying to providing information at the time that members are selecting what hotel they want to go to. That is the member decision rather than the ALA decision. In that spirit, my only concern about this is that it could be read to imply that it's ALA coming up with a list of hotels that should not be patronized, when I think the spirit of the amendment is that ALA would merely provide information about where to find information on do not patronize lists that others have prepared and are promoting.
Okay, microphone number 4. Larry.
Larry Romans, Counselor at Large. I'm a little uncomfortable with resolutions on the fly, and I would like to move that this be postponed until the beginning of new business at the next council meeting, and that in the meantime, the movers talk with Paula about what language would work the best.
Right, we have a motion to postpone the discussion on the amendment to the resolution. I'm going to ask you to please raise one hand if you are in favor of postponing the motion, the amendment to the motion. All right, all those opposed? Okay, we are going to postpone the discussion. It is approved. In addition, since the amendment is what was on the floor, I think that we are at the time for some very quick announcements, and then we will adjourn the meeting so that we can reconvene for the executive board debate or presentations. We voted to postpone. It was overwhelmingly to postpone. And mark your ballot. Mark your ballot, postpone. Postpone CD number 32, revised. Excuse me. Mark your ballot. Postpone amendment to CD number 32, revised. No? They don't have to mark the ballot? Okay. There's no marking. We have postponed. We are going to get announcements, and then we're going to have the executive board candidates appear at 12:30.
We have received the following petitions for counselor at large. Shirley A. Brusima, past president of the Kent Library, Kent District Library Board of Trustees in Comstock Park, Michigan. Jennifer Emanuel, digital services and reference librarian at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, reference research and government information services library in Urbana, Illinois. Florente Peter Ibanez, manager of library computer services at the Loyola Law School Raines Library in Los Angeles, California. Zora Sampson, director of the University of Wisconsin at Platteville Libraries Archive and Museum in Platteville, Wisconsin. Barbara Stripling, the Director of School Library Services for the New York City Department of Education Office of Library Services in New York, New York. And James K. Talia, Associate University Librarian at Idaho State University in Pocatello, Idaho. And then last but not least, just an update on registration. As of Sunday at the end of the day, we had 7,453 registrants, and with exhibitors, a total of 9,949. Last year in Boston, we had 8,251, and a grand total of 10,807.
Okay, microphone number 5.
Rodney Lippard, chapter counselor from North Carolina and co-convener of the council forum. Just a reminder that forum will meet again tonight at 8:30 in Marriott Hall 1. And please, if at all possible, speak to Dora or I beforehand if you've got something to bring forward so that we can set the agenda. Thank you.
Microphone number 6.
Sorry about that. Ronald Russ, Arkansas Chapter Counselor. The Chapter Counselors Forum will also be at the Marriott Hotel, Marriott Hall 1 at 4 p.m. So that'll be at 4 p.m. at the Marriott Hall 1. Thank you.
Microphone number 2.
Elizabeth Riddler, Counselor at Large. I just wanted to share with all the counselors, I think, what is an extremely good news story. I've been to the post office 4 times, including twice this morning. No waiting lines, extremely efficient and very helpful. They are really, they deserve a commendation, a letter of thanks from council. They really do.
Keith.
And one last announcement. As you're aware, the Executive Board Candidates Forum is going to be held in this room immediately following adjournment. Candidates' bios and statements of concern are now available at the documents pickup station, and you may pick up your ballot immediately following the forum. The ballot and the ballot box will remain in the council room from 1:30 to 2:30 p.m. this afternoon. After that, balloting will then continue in the ALA office area until 7:30 p.m. Thank you.
Okay. The chair declares the council to adjourned, and we will be reconvening at 12:30 for executive board candidates forum. Thank you.